Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. When I was a sophomore in high school, my Aunt Anne gave me a copy of Homer's Odyssey as a Christmas gift. And inside the front cover, she wrote, "One of my big surprises of this year, that this is actually a pretty good story." Well, I still have that copy of the Odyssey. And I, too, think that ancient tale is a great one. The story of Odysseus sailing home after the Trojan War to his wife and kingdom in Ithaca, having to survive run-ins with the Cyclops Polyphemus, the Sirens, the giant six-headed monster Scylla, the deadly whirlpool Charybdis, and more and more and more. And storytellers aren't done being inspired by this ancient adventure tale. And we've got a couple of takes on the Odyssey for you today. One takes place on a softball diamond, and that's coming up. But first, a folk adventure in the Appalachian Mountains that has at its center not Odysseus, but the simple hero, Jack. The storyteller is South Carolina's Tim Lowry. And his version of the famous scene from the Odyssey in which the hero has to outwit the terrifying Cyclops is called Jack and the One-Eyed Booger. Here's Tim, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
Well, old Jack, he had been round the world on a mule, so to speak. He'd had all kind of adventures. And he settled down finally over there in Williamsburg County, had him about 40 acres, and he was a-plowing with that mule. Well, he had worked all day. He is filthy, dirty, and tarred out. And all of a sudden, he looked up, and coming down the road was his big brothers, Will and Tom. They were hollering and yelling and carrying on. The sweat was a-flying off their forehead. They has worked up to a fare you well. Jack knowed something was up, so he let his mule stand under a shade tree and rest a while. And he went over to the barbed wire next to the road and asked them boys what they were carrying on about. And they come up all breathless and they said, "There ain't been nobody around here." He said, "No, there ain't been nobody around here." And they said, "There ain't been nobody a-talking to you." He said, "I've been out here in this field with a mule and I'm standing at the wrong end of him for a quality conversation. There ain't been nobody here to talk to. What are you boys carrying on about?" And they said, "Oh, well, let us be the first to tell you then. The king done declared a big old war, and every able-bodied man's got to go off and fight." Jack said, "I ain't going off and fighting in no war." They said, "Now, if the king declared a war, how you going to get out of it?" He said, "There's two reasons why I ain't going off to fight in no war, and the first one's named Sweet Lips." And them boys said, "Sweet Lips?" That was Jack's dog. He had a blue tick hound dog. She's about half growed. He named her Sweet Lips, and she's a real purty dog, and she looked like she's going to be champion coon dog. He said, "If I go off to the war, somebody else will get a hold of my dog, and they'll teach it wrong, and it'll be a cold trailing, won't be good for nothing." He said, "I'm staying right here where I can train my dog Sweet Lips." And his brother said, "You can't hide behind a dog." Well, Jack knowed that, and he said, "I told you I had two reasons why I ain't going off to fight in no war. One of them is my dog named Sweet Lips, and the other is a sweet lip girl named Sally." Oh, yeah, y'all remember Sally McCormick, Judge McCormick's oldest daughter? Yeah, all the fellers in Williamsburg County was sweet on her. But she had caught Jack's eye, and Jack had caught her heart. And they had sworn undying love to one another as soon as the judge said it's all right, they's going to get married. And Jack said, "If I go off to the war, some other fellow will be moving in and trying to take my girl." And he said, "I ain't going to be having that." And they said, "You can't hide behind a woman. That's the very definition of a coward." Well, he knowed that they had him on that score, so he had to hatch him a plan. So that night, Jack, he went home and he got his dog Sweet Lips and tied a string around her neck, and he got a double barrel shotgun and broke it down over his shoulder, and he lit out for Sally McCormick's house. Well, when he got up to Sally's place, she is a-setting on the front porch swing, and she seen Jack a-coming. She said, "Oh, Jack, did you come to whisper sweet nothings in my ear?" He said, "I didn't come to whisper sweet nothings in your ear, Sally." She said, "Did you come to sing me some purty love songs?" He said, "No, I didn't come to sing you no purty love songs. I got to go off and fight in a war, and I come and brung you my dog so you can take care of it while I'm off fighting." She said, I don't want to take care of that old dog. He said, now, Sally, if you love me, you'll love my dog. Let her sleep at the foot of your bed and feed her some good table scraps and be good to her. She said, all right, Jack, I love you, so I love your old dog. He said, and if any men come a-sniffing around here, you sick the dog on them. She said, you ain't got to worry about that, Jack. These eyes is only for you. He said, they better be only for me. He said, and if the dog don't chase them off, that's what I brought you this double-barrel shotgun for. She said, I ain't gonna need to chase off men with no double-barrel shotgun. These lips are only for you, Jack. Only for you. He said, you make sure you remember that. And he left her with that gun and that dog, and Jack went off to fight. Well, he was gone the longest of time. It's 10 years or more. Before Jack got home. Oh, yeah. And finally, when it was time to come home, Jack was on his head to get back to Sally McCormick, and he didn't want to take the road. Have you ever took that road over to Williamsburg County? Oh, my word, so full of holes and twists and winds. You meet yourself coming around some of them curves. It'd take him forever. So he thought the best way to get back home in quick fashion is to go on the river. So he got him a boat, and he put it in the river, and he lit out. Well, the awfulest storm come up. Lightning was splitting the sky, and the thunder was roaring around, and poor old Jack, he's down the bottom of that boat a-praying for his very life. Well, when the storm broke and the morning come and the light come up, Jack got blowed so far off course, he didn't know where he was. So he put his boat over to the side of the river on the bank, and he went to climbing way up to the top of a ridge. He figured if he got way up on the mountain, he could take a bear and see which way Williamsburg County was. And when he got way up there high on the mountain, he come to a big old cave. And he walked in that cave, and the whole floor was kivered over in bones. And at the back of that cave, there's a bed that would sleep 14 men. And Jack thought, ooh, I've come to a land of giants. Now, Jack knowed a thing or two about giants, and he thought, they got treasure. If I could get the treasure off one of them, I could take it home to Sally for a wedding present. So he crawled up underneath that big 14-man bed to hide. And while he was hid up there, he heard a voice come in at the mouth of the cave saying, wah, I know my supper's in here somewhere. And Jack peeped out from underneath that bed. Ooh, there's the ugliest booger he had ever seen in his life. Had long, scraggly hair hanging down its back. Had a big old warty nose. Big old arms as big as tree limbs. Legs like tree trunks. And the queerest thing about that big booger man is it had one eye right in the middle of its forehead. It was a-blinking that big eye around and sniffing and a-snorting with that big warty nose. And before Jack thought or knew what he was going to do, in behind that big old one-eyed booger come the biggest hound dog Jack had ever seen. It was big as a draft mule. And he thought, there's the treasure right there. There ain't nobody in Williamsburg County got a dog that big. I could take that dog home to Sally for a wedding present. But before he had time to hatch a plan as how to steal that dog off that giant, that old dog stuck its head right underneath that 14-man bed and grabbed Jack by the back of the neck and hauled him out. And that big old one-eyed booger man snatched up Jack and he said, oh, I smelled my supper and my dog done pulled you out from underneath that bed. And now I'm going to eat you. And he started to pop Jack right in his mouth. Jack said, wait. He said, I'm a stranger in your land. I don't know your customs, but where I'm from, people don't never eat together unless they've been properly introduced. What might your name be? That big old one-eyed giant, he said, my name's Polyphemus. What might your name be? Jack said, I'm Nobody. He said, nice to meet you, Mr. Nobody. Now I'm going to eat you. He started to pop Jack in his mouth. Jack said, not yet. You supposed to stop me up on a stick and roast me over the fire. You can't eat meat raw. That'd make you sick as a dog. So old Polyphemus, he said, I forgot that. He set Jack down. He scraped together some logs and sticks and such, and he got a big fire roaring up in that cave. And then he grabbed up Jack and he said, now, Mr. Nobody, I'm going to stab you up on the end of a stick. I'm going to roast you over the fire and eat you. Jack said, not yet. You're supposed to dip me in a pot of boiling water and scald the hair off. Ain't you never been to a hog butchering? So he said, I forgot that. So he set him down. He went and he got a big old pot, dipped up some water, and put it up on that fire. After a while, it was a bubbling and a steaming. He grabbed up Jack and he said, now, Mr. Nobody, I'm going to stick you in this water. I'm going to scald all your hair off. And then I'm going to stab you up on the end of a stick and roast you over the fire. And I'm going to eat you. Jack said, well, there's only one thing you lack, Daddy. He said, what's that? He said, you got to pray and thank the Lord. Jack knowed he had him there because he's old heathen. He didn't know nothing about prayer. He said, now get down on your knees. So that big old giant booger man, he got down on his knees. He said, fold your hands up. He folded his hands up. He said, and don't be a looking around while I'm a praying. He said, my brothers Will and Tom, they always keep one eye open during the blessing so they can snatch the best pork chop off the platter while I'm a thanking the Lord. And that old giant, he said, I only got one eyeball. I ain't going to be looking. And he closed up his eye, and Jack, he went into praying. He prayed for the longest of time. Whole time he is a praying, he is fishing a hot log out from underneath that pot of boiling water. It was pointed on the end and red hot like a fireplace poker. And he hefted that log up on his shoulder. And when he got into his prayer, he is right in front of that old hunkered down giant. He said, lead, guide, and direct us. Amen. And he shoved that log right in that giant's eye. When he popped his eye open, that log went right in. And you could hear that eyeball a sizzling and a popping like an egg in the fry pan. And that old giant jumped up and he is a hollering and yelling and carrying on. And he flung his hands around and he hit a big old rock. And it rolled right across in front of the mouth of the cave and stopped the cave up. And Jack thought, oh, now look at there. What am I going to do? I was going to get that dog and run off after I blinded him, and he done stopped the mouth of this cave up. I can't get out of here. That old giant was a-hollering and a-yelling. All the other giants in the land heard him, and they come a-climbing across the ridges and run up to the mouth of the cave, and there's a big old rock had got it stopped up. And they started yelling, Polyphemus, Polyphemus, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And he kept a-yelling, nobody hurt me, nobody hurt me. They said, well, if nobody hurt you, lay down and go to sleep. You're disturbing our rest. And they climbed back over the mountains and left that poor old giant with that log stopped up in the middle of his forehead, blind as a bat. Well, Jack was worried about how he's going to get out, and then he seen his salvation. That big old mule dog started sniffing around that rock. And that old giant was a-feeling around on that dog, and he said, my dog needs to go outside and make water again a tree. I'm going to move this rock and let him go. I'll keep my hands near him, and if I feel a man go out with him, I'll kill him dead. Jack seen his salvation, and he climbed right up underneath that dog. So when the dog walked out, that old giant was petting that dog on the head and back, didn't know that Jack was walking underneath it. And that dog went out, and Jack took that dog right down to his boat and put it up in the front of that boat, and he lit out for Williamsburg County. Well, he got down away from that one-eyed booger man, and he come around a big old bend in the river, and over there in the yard, sort of, a big old field, there's a white tent. And you could hear people in there singing songs and carrying on and laughing the holy laugh. They was having a revival. Well, there's a Bible man in there holding forth, and it ain't respectful to go past a Bible man and not listen to what he has to say. So Jack stopped and put his boat over there on the shore to listen to the word. And pretty soon, all them folks that got religion come down the river for a baptizing. And that Bible man come over there, and he thumped on that good book. He looked at Jack, and he said, son, are you saved? Well, Jack thought about that one-eyed booger man. He said, yeah, I reckon I've been saved. He said, where are you headed? Jack told him he's going back to Williamsburg County. He said, now, there's something you need to know. When you go on around the bend in this river, the river's going to fork. And there's two different ways that you could take your boat, and you're going to have to pick which way to go. And on one side, there's all kind of jagged rocks and swirls and dips, and it looks like it'd tear your boat to pieces. And on the other side, the water is just as smooth as glass, and there's all kind of willow trees hanging down on the opposite bank. It's as pretty as a picture, Jack, and you're going to have to pick which way you're going to go. And Jack said, I think I've read about this in the book from which you preach. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof is death. He said, that's right, Jack. He said, if you go over there where that water's real smooth and them purty willow trees, back up and under them willow trees, there's old witch woman's got a shack back there. She's a wicked woman, Jack, a wicked woman. I've been preaching to her forever. She ain't never gonna believe. And she gonna be looking at you through the eye of her needle. And when she sees you coming, she'll set up a song. And it'll go high and low and straight to your soul, Jack. And before you know it, you'd be drawn across the water toward them willow trees. But it's a trick. Up and underneath them willow trees, there's a big old suck. And you'll get pulled down and you'll be killed. Well, Jack didn't want to get killed in a suck. But to hear a song that would go high and low and straight to a feller's soul, now that was something. So Jack jumped out of the boat and he grabbed up some moss from the riverbank and he stuffed it in his hound dog's ears. And then he throwed that hound dog right out of the boat in front of it, and he wrapped a rope around it, and he sat up in the head of the boat and held onto that rope like you'd hold reins of a mule, and that dog went to dog paddling out in the river, and he is a holding on to it, and because that dog had moss in its ears, it couldn't hear that old witch woman a-singing her song. But Jack could hear it just fine, and ooh, yes, indeed, she set up a song that went high and low and straight to Jack's very soul. He's about ready to pitch himself into that water and swim off toward that wicked woman. But then that dog went and turned and went right down through them dips and shoals and jagged rocks and saved Jack's life. Well, finally, Jack got home to Williamsburg County, and he lit out straight for Sally McCormick's place. He put that dog over in the woods for a surprise, and when he got up to the gate, what do you think he saw? There was Sally McCormick sitting on the porch swing with Will on one side of her and Tom a-setting on the other. Them boys had lied to Jack. They had sent him off to the war, and they had stayed home and tried to steal his girl. Will was a-whispering thanks to Sally, and she was going, "Oh, Will, stop saying things like that. If you keep that up, we're going to have to get married." And Tom had a fiddle on his shoulder, and he was drawing the bow across them strings and playing all kinds of purty tunes. She said, "Ooh, Tom, them's the purtiest love songs I ever did hear." And Jack hollered from the gate, and he said, "Sally, it hurts me deep in my heart to see you two-timing me with my own brothers." Well, Sally didn't recognize him. I mean, he'd been gone 10 years or so, and he's all scraggly. His clothes is torn where he fought that big one-eyed booger man. His hair was all a mess. She said, "I don't know how you come to know my name, booger man, but go around behind the house, and my mama will get you something to eat." He said, "I ain't no booger man." He said, "I'm your man, Jack." She said, "I don't know if you're Jack or not, but there's one way to find out." She went in the house and come back with a double-barrel shotgun. She said, "My man left me with this double-barrel shotgun, but the hammers is so stiff on it, I never could pull them back. There ain't nobody around here can pull the hammers back on this here gun. I reckon if you could pull the hammers back on this gun, you'd be the man you say you are." Jack took that gun, went click, click. He pointed both barrels right at his big brother, Will. He said, "Will, where's my dog?" Old Will started in. He said, "Well, Jack, you know, you was gone an awfully long time." And Jack stuck his fingers in his mouth and he whistled real loud. And here comes Sweet Lips trotting around the end of the house. Oh, Lord, them boys had beat that dog and kicked it and starved it till it looked like it's about dead. Jack said, "It's one thing to try to steal a man's girl, and it's quite another to abuse his dog." Boom! He took a shot, and old Will jumped out of that swing and took off running down the road. Boom! He took a second shot. Tom threw down that fiddle and went right out behind him, and Jack throwed that gun down. He picked up that fiddle, and he played a song that went high and low and straight to Sally's soul. She said, "Oh, Jack, it is you. You kill me." And Jack and Sally, they got married and had all kind of puppies from them two dogs they got together. Sold every one of them for $500 each. Last time I was over at Williamsburg County, Jack and Sally, they was independent rich.
That was Tim Lowry with Jack and the One-Eyed Booger. You never know what's going to bring on a memory, and you never know what memory it's going to bring on. And thinking about the Odyssey today has me thinking about my brothers. There were four of us brothers growing up, later on a sister too, and more siblings even after that. But within a space of a year or so, those four brothers all graduated from high school or college, all in some proximity to one another. It just worked out that way. And one summer, in the middle of all that graduating, my mom held a graduation ceremony for all of us in the living room of the little house where we had all grown up, just our family. And she had meticulously planned out a program and printed it up on pieces of paper that she handed to us, a program of songs and readings and remarks. And those of us who had them wore caps and gowns, and those who didn't approximated caps and gowns, or gowns anyway, by wearing bathrobes. And we walked through the program Mom had outlined, sometimes in great solemnity, sometimes laughing our heads off. We even did a processional around the outside of the house, on the lawn, and across the driveway to the strains of our mom standing on the porch and singing Pomp and Circumstance at the top of her lungs. And at one point in the program, my mom read a poem about Odysseus returning to Ithaca. The poem is called Ithaca, and it's by the Greek poet Constantine Kafavi. The Odyssey is a Greek story. My family is of Greek heritage, and a Greek poem seemed warranted. And the poem starts out by saying, "As you set out for Ithaca, hope your road is a long one, filled with adventure and discovery." And the poem goes on to encourage you not to be afraid of the Cyclops or the other gods and monsters that might try to keep you from the journey. And it encourages you to gather up all the wisdom you can, the wisdom that comes from a long journey, so that when you finally reach Ithaca, you'll already be rich with everything you've gained on the way, all the wisdom and knowledge, and you won't look for the destination to make you rich. And I go back to that poem from time to time. And when I think of that poem, I think of my brothers and me sitting in the living room in our caps and gowns and bathrobes, listening to our mom read that poem to us. I think of the place where we were on our journey then, young men leaving their childhood home for whatever adventures lay ahead. And I think of us now, all of us grown-ups, having journeyed further down the road through having families and building lives with them, facing dangers and surviving them, reaching out to one another for help and counsel when we need it. And my brothers, as ordinary as they might look to their neighbors, take on the quality of epic heroes in my mind. And I find myself grateful for our mom. And I find myself hoping, along with the poet, that the road to Ithaca is indeed a long one. And that's where Tim's story and thoughts of the Odyssey are taking me. Where's the story taking you? And who will you take along?
There's a lot coming up, but I want to take just a moment and tell you about another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show. Now, life can be stressful, but Lisa Valentine Clark, the host of The Lisa Show, along with her guests and her unique council of moms, provide a positive and empowering look at all kinds of challenges. They tackle them head on, sharing experiences, offering suggestions on how we can handle relationships and health and technology and body image and family, all kinds of stuff. And Lisa is a great person to hang out with. The Lisa Show, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
We're so glad to have you with us today on the Appleseed Podcast. If Tim Lowry's Jack and the One-Eyed Booger was the Odyssey with a twist, this story is the Odyssey with a curveball. Minnesota storyteller Kevin Kling gives us his own Odyssey, featuring epic adventures on the local softball team. Here's Kevin with a story he calls Softball.
First, we're going to start out with the big Greek god named Zeus. And Zeus was the big god, and they said when he first created people, we had four arms, four legs, and two heads. That's what they said. But we had so much fun, we stopped listening to Zeus. We were having too much fun. Forget it, Zeus. And so in his anger, he cut us in half, and so now we have two arms, two legs, and one head. And he said, and if you don't knock it off, you're going to go down to one leg. So... But we're always, from then on, looking for our other half. We're always looking where we can connect. Where is our other half in this world? And that's what a lot of people in the Greek, ancient Greeks thought. That's where love comes from. That's where the need that all humans have for connection, that's where it comes from. I love the way Greeks think of, the ancient Greeks thought of a story. They thought of our lives like threads, like weaves, the fates that ruled our lives were all weavers. And one measured the thread, one wove the thread, and one cut the thread. And where they cut the thread, that's how long your life was. And they even said stories were like a loom, in that vertically ran the metaphor, horizontally ran the sequence, and where they came together, they wove their invisible threads for their cloaks of immortality. That was a story. So this is a story about, and it happened here. I've told this story all over the world, but it happened on Timpanogos. When I was here back in the 80s, I was working at the Sundance Institute, and one night they said, go out into the woods. There's a woman that's going to tell you a story that you'll never forget. And so we went into the woods, and there was a woman, and she told us the story of the Odyssey. It took her 10 hours. She started as the sun was setting, and as the sun was rising over the mountain the next day, Odysseus was landing in Ithaca. It was one of the most amazing 10 hours of my life. So here goes. My brother calls me up and he says, Kevin, I got the old team together. I go, what do you mean? He goes, our little league team. He says, I got the whole team back to be on an over 35-year-old softball league. I go, no, Steve. I go, no, we were terrible. We went 0-2. 0-2 years. We never won a game. We never, the whole time. I go, Steve, no. I mean, you could look at us and see we were a bunch of future thespians and accountants. But our coach was Mr. Haynes. Mr. Haynes was arguably the worst baseball coach you've ever seen. For one thing, he'd never played baseball, had no understanding of it. So he got a book that was titled How to Play Baseball. But he couldn't tell by the dotted line on the throwing man which leg was supposed to be forward. So he thought we should throw and step from the same side. It looks like this. For people at home, it's terrible. You can't even throw a ball 10 feet that way. And so our pitchers would even pitch that way. We would get killed every single game. And so I go, Steve, no. I said, no, I don't want anything to do with it. He goes, I've got Dick's Diner to sponsor us. Oh, Dick's Diner. The Medicis of softball. I mean, you could tell people at the high school reunion, I cured cancer. Okay, that's nice. And I play softball for Dick Steiner. Oh, this is my sister. What are you drinking? Let me praise you. You are a god. So I say, yeah, of course, Steve. Dick Steiner, yeah, I'm in. I'm totally in. He goes, okay. He said, meet next Wednesday, 5:30. Don't be late. So okay. So I'm there, 5:30, next Wednesday. And it is. It's the same guys. 9 accountants and 1 thespian. And my brother says, let's take infield practice. He hits a ground ball and pocket protectors and reading glasses go flying. I'm like, maybe we should rehearse. But it's too late. The other team shows up, and there's these young guys with muscle and sinew breaking through their uniforms. I look at my team. They look shaken. But I'm like, no, you guys. Young teams have passion, but not the craft. Teams with goofy names like Foul Balls or Geriatrics, don't worry, they're going to be goofy. But teams with initials followed by the words construction or refrigeration, look out. So we take the field. Okay, it's May in Minnesota, so it's 25 degrees out, and we're all in our coats and hats. Well, I'm ready to pitch the ball. I make sure all the guys are in position. I look in the outfield, and there's my brother in his duck hunting gear. He's camouflaged from head to toe. He's even painted around his eyes, and he's laying there like he's in a duck blind in the middle of the outfield, like the batter can't see him. And I'm thinking, maybe we should put softballs around him like decoys. And so he's out there, and I pitch the ball. The batter hits into the outfield. My brother jumps up like it's a big surprise, and he mimes a gun, boom, boom, and he catches the ball. Our whole team sees us, and we think the same thing at the same second. We could win a game. Okay, it's the bottom of the ninth, and this is exactly how I remember it. I'm up to bat, and 2 strikes threaten to end my evening. The other team is yelling, swing batter, swing batter. And I'm thinking, I have been. I call timeout and I go over to my bench and I say, quickly, men, lash me to my bat. My crew does as I bade. They take tape and tape my hands to the handle of the bat. And then I say, stick Bazooka Joe bubblegum in my ears so I may not hear the other team's taunts. My crew does as I bade, and I'm rewarded by 3 straight balls and an easy sailing to the first island. Oh, but wait, this island is guarded by one who is half man, half god. I know him to have but one eye, for when he did bat, his team yelled, good eye, good eye. He says, who are you? I say, nobody. He says, well, nobody. This is the last island you shall see. But I caught the eye of the batsman, and we employed the old hit and run. And as the ball is rolling, I run to second. I run with all my might. The other team is watching me run because the first baseman is yelling, get nobody, get nobody. And they're confused. So I get to the second base, and I think I'm safe. But no, this island is one who plies me with words of honey, sweet words. You're really good. Your team's a bunch of pigs. You should be on our team. I've heard you on the radio. His words of honey tempt, yet when our batter hits it to the outfield, I run with all my might to third base, where I shed hot tears for the one who sacrificed to move me forward. And now the third baseman starts to taunt me. You old man in body old and weak, you will never take this one I love, this victory. But I look to home, and there's my brother stepping to the plate. My brother, sturdy as an oak, truly the son of our father. He steps to the plate. Oh, and our third base coach, wise old sage, gives me good counsel. 2 outs, run on anything. And as my brother swings, I run with all I have down that third base path until a man ruddy complexion blocks my path. I smash into the man, sending man and orb flying. And then Zeus, lord of this flatland, Zeus disguised in mask and armor, Zeus proclaims me safe at home. Oh, how the heady wine did flow. The other team shrieking like birds of prey, renting garments. We excuse ourselves to Dick's Diner, where we set aside desire for food and drink. Extra cheese on mine. And then we make our way home and warm ourselves with welcome fleece. And as dawn, with her rose-red fingers, again colors the sky, I awake in these old bones again. I walk into my office, where the bat still sits, tape hanging off the handle, and I await my brother's call. Thank you.
That was Kevin Kling with Softball. Have you ever experienced an epic odyssey of your own? What were some of the hurdles and obstacles you've faced in the epic journey of your life? What are some of the monsters you've vanquished or outsmarted? Who are some of the heroes that have accompanied you? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. And here's a reminder to check out the Appleseed lesson plans on our website, byuradio.org. Whether you're a teacher, a homeschooler, or a parent, you'll find lots of lessons and storytelling activities based on some of your favorite Appleseed stories. Find us on the Appleseed page at the website, byuradio.org, under the For Educators tab. We want to thank Tim Lowry and Kevin Kling for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their tales. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Assistant producers include Garrett Gunnell, Carrie Griggs, Kay Hendrickson, and Nico Wetzel. And our post team is Trent Reimschussel and DJ Cromartie. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcasts, Kaboom for original audio adventures, and Wink, stories for better bedtimes. All our podcasts can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.